President Riggs, Dr. Jones, members of the board, thank you for inviting me up here to talk to you about security measures at our school district. This is obviously a very concerned within our community and throughout our country of what are we doing to keep our kids safe, our schools safe. So I'm happy to talk to you today about those security measures in our district. For obvious reasons, there are some details that we're not going to divulge, but I would be happy to discuss with each and every one of you if you have any questions privately, if you have any questions on those. One of the first things that when I took over this position the start of November was to make sure that our emergency response plan was updated with all the new schools that have been built and the change of administrations to the different buildings. I wanted to make sure that our emergency response plan was updated. Emergency response plan is basically an emergency management plan that entails all hazardous emergency preparedness procedures. And that is to include as simple as the continuity of school administration. Who is in charge of that building and who is in succession if that person's not there? It goes on to talk about incident command system. Who is the command staff of that building? And it goes over sections of safety officers, operations, planning, logistics. Each person is given that duty and it's listed on the incident command system. Your bigger schools sometimes have persons for each of those roles. Your smaller schools, one person could be the operations and planning and logistics person. But there's a list of all those persons and the duties that are in that building. It also goes over our emergency contact numbers. Every agency, police department, and fire department in Benton County, Rogers, Bentonville, Centerton, Bella Vista, and Benton County Sheriff's Office, has all those information and those numbers, along with hotline numbers, suicide hotline numbers, shelter information, poison centers, anything in Benton County, resources that we have, is listed in this plan. Most importantly, each building has an evacuation, their own designated evacuation rally points, primary and secondary spots, and they have to make contact with that designated area to make sure that, of course, they are able to accept our students, our staff, has contact information that if we had to go into an emergency evacuation, they're prepared and ready to take us on. Also included that is what we call off-site shelter, which is our family reunification centers, which would probably be in a different location than our evacuation points. It would be somewhere where we would probably end up busing our students to that area. And again, it is primary and secondary locations. And again, a point of contact for those areas that we would be going to. Along with that, it also includes emergency management locations. These are where command posts would be designated. Be an interior command post in that building, a designated exterior command post, depending on the situation of the event. But these are very important information that we can go to, the teachers or administrators can go to right away, along with our police departments when they respond. As I said, there's several procedures all the way from fights in a classroom to threats, missing students, hazardous materials, and including active shooter procedures. It talks about, it lists all the crisis intervention team that we have in that building and who's in their mental health crisis teams. One of the important things that I really like about this plan is it has site mapping. Every building includes their floor plans of that building, and it goes down from the number of the classrooms in that floor plan, and it has aerial photographs of the exterior and interior of that building. You can click on a camera, kind of a pinpoint, in that building, and it'll show you the hallway or the entryway or the commons cafeteria area for that school, which includes the area or locations of our water, electrical, and gas shutoff locations. And this is important because when we first started this plan, I think it was back in 07, when we started going to the safe plans, we were able to implement this same website, a secure website, to our police department in Bentonville. Our Bentonville Police Department has in every laptop and every officer this same website that they can get into, have this same information, and most importantly, they can bring up the floor plans right away and have the locations of shutoff valves and have a view of the area that they're looking and going into. After each building principal updates this policy, then it gets reviewed and approved, and then the administration staff are to review it with their staff and then print out a hard copy and place it in a location, which is usually the principal's office, and each administrator knows where that plan is located.
So, Officer Beer, sorry.
You can call me Officer. I switch my first name to Officer legally, so.
Thank you for making me not look so stupid by asking the question that way. But so you mentioned that the police department has access to that system. How do they gain access to that? Is it constant, or is it gained by us allowing them to have that?
Safe Plans, the company that we go through on this, set that up with the police department, gave them that availability. It wasn't the school district. At the time when we did this, we included the Bentonville Police Department in our plans and our training in this, and so they were able to obtain this. I am working with Centerton and Bella Vista to be able to get the same information on their websites or on their laptops. They currently do have all the floor plans for each of the school buildings in their cities and their jurisdiction.
And I'm assuming Elementary 12 will be built in the city limits of Rogers. We'll hear about that later, but we'll be working with Rogers.
Yes, we'll be working with Rogers and meeting with them, and we'll be adding that new school into our plans to include Rogers being available to get that same system.
That's great.
Steve, how would you describe the shape of our video surveillance system? Is it adequate?
I mean, the camera system that we have at our schools?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, they're used basically for being able to go back and to look at things that may have already occurred. We don't have a designated person that sits and watches it all the time, but it is available if we have an officer sitting there and being able to monitor it. When I was there, that was one of the things that I did, especially in the mornings, is just watching people that entered into the building. I mean, our program is as good as we can do with it. There's always room for improvement, but it really helps for us to go back and use that as investigating incidents that happen on our campuses.
Now, in Florida, there was great confusion that the school district and the police were not on the same page, that the video was on tape delay. So that's one question. I'm assuming you have us on that same page. And without going into too much detail, in a bad situation, would we have external access to the video in the parking lot if we went to, like, full-on command post mode? I mean, can we tap into that?
Currently, the police department do not have that ability to bring that on to any of their laptops. One of the trainings we did a while back at Bentonville High School, we did an actual active shooter kind of a response training. It was on a weekend. We had all our administrators. We invited students as role players. And what we learned on that is that we need a designated person that can go to the camera system and pull it up and be able to give information. And so we would have to have an officer be with that administrator pulling up that information. And they can go live at what we're, you know, what they are looking at that's happening right then, or they can go back and pull back, 20 minutes before to see where that person came through. But what they did, it sounds like, is they went back and were looking at the incident that happened minutes before, I guess 20 minutes before, and were relaying that information, unfortunately.
Are we also, I mean, we have this wonderful system that can ring every phone in my house telling me it's a snow day. Are we working on the protocol with Leslie on who takes control of that to tell every parent in the district what to do or not do at the height of a crisis?
Yes, and that's what Leslie's in charge of, I guess. Yes, she's handling that.
And we could also tell them not to approach the school yet and so forth. Okay.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, moving along. Active shooter response training. This is what we call the civilian response to an active shooter event. This is what we train all of our teachers in our district at the beginning of the year. We assemble the teachers at the different schools, the different buildings that they're at, and we go over this active shooter response training. Now, there are several different types of training that are out there. When I first started as a resource officer in 01, it was get out, take out, lockout. We switched over to run, hide, fight at one point, and we're training with that. And now currently we're using what we call avoid, deny, defend. And I did a little research on that, and to make sure, you know, what we were using was adequate training. The state of Arkansas Emergency Management uses that. The Attorney General, State Patrol use that. And most importantly, Bentonville Police Department use this same training when they train citizens, they train our businesses, our hospitals, and even Walmart Home Office, which happens to be a co-sponsor of this training. And so I wanted to make sure that we were using the same training that our community is using, and be on the same page in what the state of Arkansas, most of is using. But the message is the same. The terminology may be different, run, hide, fight, avoid, deny, defend, but it's the same exact message that is going out there to all of the training and the staff. As I stated, we train all of our staff at the beginning of the year. It makes sense that we train this before the students arrive and that they're properly prepared. We also put on an active shooter or the training at the second part of the semester for new teachers that are getting hired in between the middle of the year, and for others that hadn't received the training and didn't get to go. What I like about this training is it talks about the disaster response psychology. And to me, that's very important. It talks about stress response. What can happen in a stressful incident where your heart rate goes up, and what can happen and what can't happen, what you can do, what you can't do if you let your stress level go up. And it talks about mental preparedness, how to get your mindset right and be prepared if there is a situation that happens. We don't want them to have to make a decision when that stressful event happens. We want them to be prepared well ahead of time, so when that event happens, they already have a plan to go on. And it's as simple as knowing your surroundings whenever you enter into a building, whether it's at school or whether it's at a restaurant, a theater, the store. Be aware of your surroundings. Where are your evacuation points? Where are your exits? So when you go there, you have that in your mind, so if an emergency happens, you're already programmed to go to that location. So I feel it's just as important, if not more important, than the actual options that you have in an emergency, being mentally prepared. I'm very passionate when I talk about those to the teachers about being prepared in a situation, because that is so important. It talks briefly about some active shooter events that have happened, and then it talks about the different options that you have, the options of what you can do, which is the avoid, deny, defend, run, hide, fight. It avoid the attack, deny access to your location, and defend yourself. Basically, it's common sense. If you're near the threat, you avoid it. You get away from it. You run away from it. You escape. You evacuate. If you can't get away, run away, evacuate, then you lock down. If you're in a location where you're in a classroom, it's better to put yourself in a locked room, barricade it up, and then follow the plan which the teachers are shown and trained. And it also goes over how to defend yourself. Again, getting that mindset that if you had to defend yourself, this is what you got to do. But most importantly, like I said, it all has to do with the mindset and then having the options to do those things. Any questions on that training? Some of the additional security measures that we have, It's very important that we practice our lockdown drills. We practice fire drills every month by law. And so there's no reason why we can't do lockdown drills the same way. Right now, we require to do them at each building to do at minimum of 3 lockdown drills in a school year. But I encourage our buildings to do more, and most of them are doing at least 1 a month. When we do the lockdown drills, I ask to be invited whenever we have those drills so I can go and evaluate the drills to make sure that each building is doing it the same way and doing it efficiently and effectively. And sometimes we change the conditions of the drill. This first drill may be as simple as just a simple announcement. Teachers are in the classroom. It gets our students, and mainly the younger ones, used to this situation, this drill. And the next one might be a little bit more where it's in between classes, where the students are walking in the classroom, and now the teachers have to go out and bring those kids into the classroom and immediately go into lockdown. So we kind of change it up a little bit, put a little bit more stress on the teachers so that they get involved. Monthly site visits and assessments, that's something that I do every month. When Dr. Jones first took on the position as the superintendent, the first thing she did was want to do site assessments to all of the buildings. And so we started doing that, and you know, we learned some things about what we can do and improve. And so I wanted to maintain that and do that on a monthly basis. And it's as simple as walking in the building, checking perimeter doors to make sure that they're locking and latching properly. Sometimes weather conditions cause our doors not to lock properly, and if we can get that fixed right away, I mean, that's what we want to do. What I do is I go around and check every classroom's doors, making sure they're locked. One of the things that we emphasize to our teachers is keep your doors locked at all times. In the training, when we do our active shooter training, we explain how in a high-stress situation, your stress level goes up. There's no way that you're going to be able to go out and put a key in the door and lock it because your motor skills deteriorate in a high-stress situation. So we tell them to keep their doors locked. So what I do is I just go along, make sure they're locked, remind them, and the teachers are doing great. They keep their doors locked. Any questions so far on our lockdowns or site assessments?
So okay. on here, it states change conditions after each drill.
That is what I was talking about. The first one could be a basic drill, the teacher's in the classroom, the students are in the classroom. Next thing, we may change it where they're in the middle of changing classes, coming from recess or at the high school level, changing, going to a different period, and we'll do the lockdown drill then, which makes kind of changes that drill and makes the teachers go a little bit more into going out into the hallways. And there are other methods that we're going to be employing at the end of the year.
So the buildings know that we're going to do these on a quarterly basis, but they don't know necessarily when.
The first drill, usually the teachers and sometimes the students know we're doing a lockdown drill. The second one, we may notify the teachers that we're going to be doing a lockdown drill on that week or on that day, but we don't give them a time. And so maybe the third one, the administration will decide we're going to do a lockdown drill and not notify the teachers.
Just leaning over to Mr. Burgess and saying, I just hate that this is a reality that we have to live in, but sure. I appreciate that we're doing that. Thank
you. Could I ask you a lockdown question? I was at the cafeteria at Central Park Elementary last week, and just as a human being, I mean, forget being a board member, there's a wall of glass doors going outside. And there's a pretty secure kitchen at the back of the room. And they had just done a lockdown drill that day, and they moved the kids into the kitchen and they closed the doors. I personally was wondering, I know the culture of education is the teacher never relinquishes control of the cluster of students. But are there not scenarios where scattering out the door get you away from the danger point more effectively?
What we tell our teachers, and they ask that same question, is given the circumstances of the situation, if there's a threat here, I mean, you run that way. If the safest place to go is through that kitchen and lock down into that room, then that's where they go. If the safest route is going out the emergency doors and outside, then that's where they go. We even tell our teachers, classroom teachers, are now taking their classrooms because it's difficult to do a lockdown drill during a lunchtime situation for obvious reasons, kids miss their lunches. It's as simple as that. And so we have our classroom teachers taking their classroom to the library or to the gymnasium or to the cafeteria, and they just walk through, okay, in this situation, this is where we go, and we're gonna, or this is where we go out the exit. It just helps the kids to get familiarized with, if that situation happens, they know, I'm going to go out here, I'm going to go out here. But the option is, depending on the threat, you go outside the door or you go inside the kitchen. Either move is correct.
Do you ever have any issues, or how do you train the kids? When I talked to my kids about this last week, it seems like they, you know, one is like, I'm going to do whatever the teacher tells me. And I have another one who said, I'm not going to be a sitting duck. I'm out the door. How do you talk to teens at the high school level to do what they need to do?
Again, it just kind of depends on the situation and what we're working with our kids on that situation. Again, if they're outside in an area, we want them to run. We want them to escape. They don't have to wait for their teacher. They evacuate right away. But if they're in a classroom, we don't want them running out of the classroom out into the unknown, where if they run out to a hallway, they don't know if the threat is just right around the corner. So if they have the ability to lock down, then they lock down. And, you know, we've told our teachers, if you have an secondary escape route, like a door or something like that, and you can get out, then get out. But we prefer if you lock down. The average, national average for police to arrive are 3 minutes. Bentonville, it would be a lot quicker. But all you have to do is hold on for 3 minutes, and help will arrive. One of the things that I'm really believe in is accountability of who's in our buildings. And so we're making it mandatory. It's been mandatory. We're making it enforcing that all teachers wear their security ID badges. Several times we've had adults, parents, go into the buildings without checking in properly and walking. Staff members sometimes, because of the large schools, may not know everybody who's a staff member in that building. And so if they see somebody walking without the proper ID badge, they can stop and question who that person is. And what we're going to do is the same thing with our students. Starting next year, we're going to make, at least starting with our high school level, having our students wear ID badges. Again, I've been there when we've had former students, even expelled students, come into the building during lunchtimes, mainly just to socialize. But they come into the school, and staff members don't know if they're supposed to be there or not. Some may recognize them, but that's 30, 40 minutes later. So if all of our students are wearing badges, it enables our security, our staff to recognize, this person doesn't have an ID badge, and question why that person's in the building. And there'll be purpose and reason for our students to wear those, because we're looking at putting some kind of a scan code on that ID so that they have to use it to maybe get into the internet or to the library. So we're looking at that method, but it'll be a reason for them to have it and wear it at all times. Our AI phone system is basically a audio-video security entry system. I'm sorry, did you have a question? Okay. It's a audio-video security system that we have now in all of our elementary and middle schools. Again, through our threat assessment that we did at the beginning when Dr. Jones took over, we started implementing those into our schools, into our elementary and middle schools. And we are to the point that right now we just have one more school that we're in the process of finishing up. And so we're adding that security measure that when a visitor comes to the front door, they have to be buzzed in. We train our staff who monitor this to do a simple ask a question, can I help you? That just gives them time to evaluate who's at the door and then let them in if there's any issues. So that, in along with Lincoln Junior High, because of the way that building is set up, that we have that for that school.
Hey, Steve, I was sharing this with Dr. Jones the other day. I go pick my granddaughter up from a adventure club every now and then on the backside of Sugar Creek. And I told her, I said, I bet you a dollar I could put on a black hoodie and just cover my head up and look really bad and push that button, they'd buzz me in every day. Are we getting the training there at that level? Because
I am actually meeting with them, I think this week, and we're going to go over all the security measures and what they do, because that has been a practice of you know, the buzzer goes off, they look at it, and they hit the button.
Can they even see it back there?
Pardon me?
Can they even see the front door back there when they're in the back? I think they're in the kitchen area, the common area. Yeah.
I'd have to look and see with their camera, because I know the camera system is set up the same way at the entrance. So they have a monitor that they can look at and then speak if they need to and then buzz them in. So we're going to make sure that they, again, just ask a simple question of, can I help you, to be able to enable them to just evaluate instead of just hitting the buzzer. School resource officers. We have school resource officers in our secondary schools. We have security personnel at our secondary schools. These are extra eyes and ears for our large buildings that help our resource officers. Again, they're extra eyes and ears. But in all of our schools, I'm sorry?
Have enough school resource officers?
We have enough school resource officers. Right now, they're just in our secondary schools. In our high schools, it's an evaluation that we're looking at. And, in fact, I believe we're going to be asking for an extra resource officer. Ms. Dina Ross will be addressing that. But what we have at all of our schools is extra security. 5 years ago, after the Sandy Hook incident, one of the things, when I was a resource officer, my granddaughter said how scared she was to go back to school on that day. And so I met with Chief Simpson, and we talked about placing police officers at every school, elementary school, middle school, just to be present in the morning when the kids arrive, make them feel safer. And then Chief Simpson went on to implement where all of our officers throughout the day do what we call extra security checks, where they would go into each school as many times as they can, walk through the school, check the doors, talk to the administration, and even during lunch times when the kids are out and get familiar with them. And that has been maintained for all those 5 years. Now, I've talked with Centerton and Bella Vista chiefs, and they're doing the same things. They're assigning officers to go into their schools in their cities, and in Bella Vista, they have a designated officer that is responsible for the same thing. So all of our schools are getting armed police officers throughout the day as many as times as they can. Our Raptor Visitor Check-In System is a security system that I started back in 2004 at the high school level. What I did is, first thing I noticed is there's no accountability for building in that south building. So we were able to implement this system at the high school, which basically it's a screening against registered sex offenders. It has nothing to do with a criminal history check or anything, but we want to know if we have registered sex offenders coming into our building. And it helps us to track who's in our building. It gives out the driver's license used to get scanned, produces an ID badge with that person's photo ID from their driver's license. It tells who that person is and the location they're going to. So if they're not in that designated area, then we can question about that. It also gives us the ability to add security alerts. Parents come in with custodial papers showing this person cannot have any contact with this child. And so we can add that information into the system. So if that person checks in, it gives an alert. And again, it tracks every visitor that comes in there. When I was at the high school, I was able to determine we have between 10 and 15,000 visitors a school year. It's amazing the number of people that come into our buildings. So having that capability of tracking them, it's what it's all about. Any questions? One of the things that I'm really excited about is the See Something, Say Something campaign. And again, Dr. Jones is kind of responsible for that, putting that into our system. But it's basically kind of a community involvement, getting our community involved in keeping our area, our community safe. And Dr. Jones went a step further to include our students at our schools by adding a confidential tip line. It enables our students to, if they feel embarrassed, to go to an adult, for whatever reasons, go to a teacher or anything, and they just don't feel comfortable doing that, they have the ability to call and give that information through the tip line. We've been plugging it out there in our student announcements, our building flyers, through social media, and from what I understand, we're also going to be putting that information on our buses. I'll be honest with you, the first when we first started using that, it was a little bit slow. We weren't getting a lot of information, but in the last 2 weeks, obviously from recent events, I've been getting a lot of calls, which I monitor. I've had four in the last week that are information that we were able to follow up and investigate. There were valid information that came in, and I got one up to this morning, just of a young a girl who was concerned about a friend of hers being depressed, and so we were able to contact the counselors of that school and get that student in there and talk to them and see what we can do. So it's been really, really resulting in a lot of good information, and I'm really excited about that. And when I talk to teachers during staff meetings, one of the things I talk about to them is, you know, everybody has to get involved in this security. It's not just relying on resource officers or cameras or administration. It takes a team. Everybody has to do their part to keep our school safe. And that's as far as going out to the hallways and just monitoring traffic, that people going by, watching to see if doors are left propped open and closing those. Basically, if you see something, do something, is what they're told. So we make sure that our staff are involved in this too, and they're very concerned also.
Speaking of doors being propped open, what about line of sight issues? The in thing in education has been to design open, long line of sight. So my question is, do we have windows where we should have curtains? Should we be actively looking to decrease wide line of sight in some of our buildings?
You're talking to a former police officer who, you know, schools are made to look beautiful. But security-wise, you know, all those windows are a security nightmare for us. We are obtaining some of those schools' blinds for those windows, covers, what we can do to put in those buildings, because you know, that is a concern for those teachers in that classroom. Some of them we are able to evaluate and come up with procedures to do, but yeah, I mean, it is a security issue.
But you are doing blinds and decreasing line of sight in some areas.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
One of the other things we do, just when we're talking about security measures, is canine detection dogs. We're taking our canine dogs to our high schools and doing random checks in the classroom and in the parking lot, and we do them as many as once a month or more if that high school wants to do more. And what we're seeing, and the message has always been, we notified kids, we notified teachers or parents beforehand. It wasn't a great surprise. We let them know what we were going to do, and the message is, don't bring your drugs to school. That's not the place to bring them. And we're seeing those results now. We're bringing drug dogs in. We may get an alert on a car or something, and a student says, I knew not to bring drugs to school. I'm not going to do it. And so the message is out there, and we're seeing basically results because of that. One of the last things I want to hit on is meeting with our community, with our police departments and our fire departments, and going over what our security measures are at our school and what their security measures are with that department, and how, if they had to respond, what's going to happen, so that we're all on the same page. One of the things that I can say here with guarantee, being that I was a Bentonville police officer, is that when we do our active shooter training, and back in the day I was one of the instructors as an active shooter response, one of the training that we do with our Bentonville Police Department is we train our officers. When they get there, they immediately go into the building. They don't hesitate. The first officer that arrives does not wait for backup. He goes immediately into the building, goes immediately to the threat, and then engages and terminates that threat. So every officer goes through that same training, that they do not hesitate. They immediately go in because they know backup is shortly behind them. Talking with Centerton, talking to Bella Vista, they have that same training and that same mindset. So I know for a fact that there will be no hesitation by our officers when they arrive at a scene such as that, they will immediately enter into the building. Any questions?
I'd like to comment on a few things. From my perspective to the board, this is better than a good plan. This is what you just heard represents the high end of public school safety plans. This is a really good, solid plan. And as you mentioned, there'll be a lot of things that he's not going to talk about tonight, but what you should have heard is there's a seeking of continually improving on the systems, technology, processes, plans, and activities in the schools to continue to make that better. One thing that you talked about at length before, not tonight so much, was the Parent Resource Center, and I just want to comment on that. Rebecca mentioned that she's having this conversation at home. I would venture that almost every parent in our school district, it's on their mind, and they're thinking about, what do I say to my kids? How do I talk about school safety? How do I encourage them to do the right things? And we, in a brief meeting this past week, we talked about adding a resource library to the website that allowed parents to go to find resources from. There are a number of nonprofit agencies that give some good tips. Arkansas Department of Education has some that give tips to parents. So I know that that was on your list of improvements, not necessarily from the school safety side, but maybe from the communication side. And I feel like it's really important. You know, this is a great opportunity when people say, what is happening to protect my kids? We should have a good answer, but we should also say, and you can help by, and then we can add in those things that they can do. And a little plug for Watchdog Dads here, that extra set of eyes of a parent or grandparent in the schools is critical. And so as parents are asking, what can we do to help? You can go volunteer to be in your kid's school. Take 20 minutes and get trained on what to do, and then be in that school a couple times a month. It's really valuable stuff, that timing. Another plug here, kind of shamelessly, for what the board hasn't seen yet, but the school bus ad campaign. In my opinion, this is an opportunity to really get the See Something, Say Something message out there to our community and incorporate that in a way that companies are paying for that ad sponsorship, generating that revenue. But this is not about generating revenue. It's really about taking that campaign more broad to the public. And you know, I that's going to come before the board at some point, and I'd really like your support to deal with that when we have that opportunity. And then the last thing is maybe for the community. I think prior to that, let me leave that for a last comment. You had mentioned your summertime drills, and I think it's an important aspect, because every year there's new police officers, there's new command staff, there's new people involved, and you'd mentioned that potentially this next go-around, a multi-jurisdictional approach, because as our communities grow, we'll have a school in Rogers, we'll have a school in Bentonville, we'll have several schools in Bentonville, we'll have them in Bella Vista and in Centerton. And the coordination of response is critical. I don't know if you know, but an all-call goes out when an incident happens, and the closest officers on or off duty are going to be the first ones there. And so having had the ability to spend some time in the building with the fellow officers from another department that they may or may not have spent time with before is really important, and I know that's on your plan as well. But the last comment I'd make for the community is, it is appropriate in our day and age today to live at the right state of awareness. And that state of awareness is described by most security experts as yellow. It's not green. It's not red. Green is, I don't pay attention to anything and I just go about my day. I think our society is past that point. I think we're neglectful and not paying attention to things that are around us. So things like the See Something, Say Something campaign should be especially effective. I'd also encourage the community to really resist living in red. That heightened sense of awareness, of worry, where it's consuming you, where you can't focus on anything else, one, it's not healthy for you. It's certainly not healthy for the kids. And in our school district, I can assure you we have a very good plan. It can get better, and it's continuing to get better. But focus your attention on living in a heightened sense of awareness. Pay attention to the things that are around you. but avoid and resist the compulsion to really be so worried and concerned about it that you can't live your life, that you can't send your kids to school.